Hey, America.
Start listening now.
Hi, everybody.
I didn't hear Sam. There's no Sam.
There's no Sam. There's no Sam. Sam went to Canada, of all places. My God.
Wow, sounds like she'll be gone for the whole weekend. You know what we can do in the meantime? Throw a super cool pool party and borrow the car.
Woo! And welcome to another Grand Theft episode of 12 Points from America, a Eurovision Song Contest podcast from America, the country that stuck on me like a tattoo. I'm Eric.
I'm Derek.
And I'm Danny.
No, Sam, she actually did go to Canada for some reason. Canada, our mortal enemy here in America. But you know
she'll apologize upon her return.
I hope so. Happy July, everybody. I hope, if you are in America, you had an interesting July 4th and spent some of it blowing things up, which is what we do here, and that you had a sweet pool party, and then you stole Cameron's dad's car and took it around Chicago, joined a parade, and so on. And speaking of parade, Sam hit him with...
Oh, whoa.
Well, now what do we do? Does anyone know how to do the socials?
Yeah, I can do the socials. I was just going to mention that, you know, it might not be good for our listeners who are, I think, primarily British. A lot of people British, but it is nice to be in one of the world's greatest traditions, which is, you know, celebrating your independence from England. It's the world's most widely celebrated holiday. But yeah, here's the socials. You can find us at all the standard social media outlets, Facebook, Twitter, TikTok, Threads, Blue Sky, Instagram, all of them. At 12 Points USA, or you can just email us directly at 12pointsfromamerica@gmail.com. You can feel free to buy our fabulous merchandise on Redbubble or support us on Patreon. We have a goodie on Patreon right now for this specific show, which will be fun. Thank you to all of our patrons out there. Whether you support us financially or not, we love you, but those Patreon supporters do get that exclusive content and early access to episodes just like this one.
Yeah. All right. Well,
do we have any news before we head into things?
Depends on your definition of news, I guess. At the time of recording, we've learned a couple of things about a couple of things. Let's start with the least Eurovision thing of all, which is Eurovision Young Musicians, which is super, super cool and is coming up later this summer. We do have a final lineup. There are 11 countries participating. There is a, I think, quite interesting mix of instruments being played. Normally, it's a lot of violin. I think this year there is one violinist.
Thank God.
Which is interesting. We have, and I'm especially excited about this, a euphonium player.
Hell yeah. That's it? Just a solo euphonium player?
Yeah. From, where is he from? Yeah, he's from Switzerland. So he's the Nemo of this event. Yeah, we have a few pianos, cello, clarinet, flute, and oboe.
Armenian oboe player. What a... Mm-hmm. Ah, yes. Yes.
Yeah, and I'm sure that the oboe piece is written by Tokyo 9. So that's going to be very... that'll be very interesting to see.
Good.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to that.
Austria? Great.
Yeah. I feel like we have access to someone with a lot of experience in the classical music field that might be able to come and chat with us about this one. We'll see.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Wasn't sure if you froze or we were just being extra dramatic.
No, speaking just being Danny. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Speaking of extra dramatic, the 2024 Eurovision contest has started to have some aftermath things hit the public eye. The EBU released a statement that said a lot and also very little, I think. But there are some encouraging things here.
Not a lot about 2024 itself, but changes that will happen in the future.
Right.
Spurred by 2024.
Yeah. There are three focuses that are apparently being focused. We've got EBU governance and participation, taking a closer look, a more in-depth look at the leadership of the organization and what it means to participate in Eurovision and things like that. One big part of that is Martin Osterdahl, who is keeping his job, which is a little bit surprising to me. But the number of responsibilities seems to be going down. There's going to be a program director for Eurovision each year that is separate from Martin's job. And so hopefully maybe the leadership won't won't be stretched quite so thin when there are all these moments of crisis, although hopefully they don't have those anyway. But I don't know. That seems fine. Safety and risk management, that's probably maybe the biggest thing here. We've had several artists over the last several years now talk about how difficult being a participant in this thing is, and how artists are treated and how their mental health is protected, and things like that. So I'm curious to see what comes of those things specifically, and I hope to hear some specifics on that sooner rather than later. And then audience engagement, fans and media specifically, they want to increase the amount of audience engagement, increase social media presence, and work more with fan sites rather than less. That's us. So okay, congratulations to us on being that.
I was going to say, because at first, that doesn't seem to be like something that Eurovision is hurting for, is more audience. In fact, they're making more Europeans every day. But if that means engagement with fan sites and engagement with, you know, people like us and programs like us that are all devoted to all of this and help keep their beautiful machine a running, then I think that that sounds good, especially because of what you guys have experienced with sort of a tight-fistedness with press engagement at the show itself over the past couple of years. That sounds very promising.
Derek, what do you think?
They make changes every year. I don't want to make promises about it until I see it.
Yeah,
that's kind of where I'm at too. It just seems like, yeah, this all sounds good, but you know, what is it actually going to look like? What is actually going to tangibly be different?
The EBU, the bad boyfriend of podcast broadcasters.
Kind of.
You've done this to us before.
You said you'd change, and that lasted all of 2 weeks, didn't it?
Ultimately, they're a business, and they want to appease the fans because they know that's where all their money comes from. So I'm hoping these changes are... I mean, you can't please everybody, but I'm hoping it's an improvement, to say the least. I don't think they could get worse than they did this year.
It was rough. It was. They ended up putting on a good show, but my God, the lead up to it that whole week was just tense.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was just so much more stressful than other times have been. And I don't, it's not supposed to be like that. This is supposed to be just a fun music thing. Just last year, Liverpool, awesome. Just about everything was fantastic. And this year, just, yeah, the vibes were off. Vibes were off. Anyway, speaking of next year, we've got four bids in. The contest will be held in one of the following cities: Basel, Bern, Geneva, Zurich. No huge surprises there.
Literally not a surprise to anyone. If you would have said pick the four countries or pick the four cities.
I think Bern is the one that is doing the joint bid with the small town near Bern that is Nemo's hometown.
Oh sure. Oh, that would be cute. But yeah. I don't think anyone was holding out for like Sam Moritz. You know,
Bern's a cute city. Yeah. I don't think they could possibly host it though.
No. It would have to be a dual bid. Yeah.
Yeah. Is it just too small?
I don't even think they have an arena that would accommodate.
Huh. Yeah, I think it's just one of these cities that's a national capital, but doesn't really have any, you know, it's not a primate city. It's not doing anything else except for, hey, it's where everyone comes to be in parliament or whatever it is. Do they have a parliament? They have a house of
something like that. Stuff. It's like St. Paul.
Yeah. No one can.
Our favorite
people do live in St. Paul. Yeah. Unfortunately, St. Paul does have 200,000 people in it. I don't think Bern does.
Whatever. Bern feels like a very like old European village kind of city. Like it, like whenever they film movies in some vague European country, Bern is the kind of city you'd imagine.
Yeah, it feels like Bern is the idea of Bern hosting Eurovision. It's like it might as well be the city that Charlie Bucket lives in Willy Wonka the Chocolate Factory hosting Eurovision. It's like, well, where are they gonna do it?
I like that city. Yeah. So Sokovia, basically.
Oh God.
Yeah, from Age of Ultron. That's what we've got for next year at this point. Yeah, it's July. So I guess Noah Carell was announced in July, but that's like the only
I was going to say. Like,
that's the only time that's ever
we might be getting news from some outlier very soon. Yeah,
maybe. All right, let's get to our main topic. Again. Oh, ooh. Boy, that actually really worked out well for them.
Well, because he was good.
Well, yes.
Certainly helps.
Yeah.
I can't wait for France to get yet another top 10 finish. And yeah.
All right. So we're going to talk about not France today, as we do most days. But anyway, Sorry, France, you're fine. I'm looking forward to your Olympics very much.
I don't think the athletes are. It's going to be hot. It's going to be hot.
Mm-hmm. And everyone pooped in the river. I don't know if you saw that story.
Yikes.
So French.
Yeah. Anyway, we're talking about Tattoo today. This is the pop duo from the early aughts that made a real splash really all over the world. And then did Eurovision. And this is kind of unusual, I think, at the just about the peak of their fame.
Yeah.
Where, I mean, we can say that. We've had big stars do Eurovision before, but it's usually like a Katrina, hasn't had a hit in a while, that sort of thing. Darude. Remember Darude? Mm-hmm. Had a real...
Or sort of like someone who is at the beginning of their career, you know?
Mm-hmm. But Tattoo was one of the biggest acts in the world in like 2002, 2003, and that is precisely when Russia picked them to go to Eurovision. So we're going to be talking about that, a little bit about the 2003 contest generally, mm-hmm. but mostly about Tattoo and their song. Do this, another one of these song deep dives, basically. And yeah. Sam can't stop us, so...
I should say one thing.
They're not going to get us.
No. Just to set the stage for sort of how big Tattoo was and sort of how unique they were. When I was looking into, you know, to us covering this topic over this past weekend, I took a look at the abstract to a scholarly essay off of JSTOR. And there was they were talking specifically about Tattoo in this moment and about Eurovision 2003. And, you know, I wasn't able to access the full article because you need a like university library subscription in order to do that. And I wasn't about to go around all of those hoops, but I was able to look at the entire abstract. And it was crazy that they were talking how, if you can think back to 2003, there really was no market penetration in the West or in America of something like Bollywood, of something like J-pop was still extremely underground. K-pop was unheard of at this time. The amount of cultural exchange between the East and West was really, really, really limited to niche acts and acts that you hear that you really have to go seek out. Things like African world music. There really was nothing like Tattoo. And I know it's being slightly generous to call Russia, you know, the Orient, you know, the East, but they really don't enjoy a true spot in what we would call like the Western world, you know? So the idea that Tattoo was sort of from this far off land, they were the only act that had crossover to basically all the West that anyone in the West would have heard about at this time, that they were extremely unique in this regard.
They were probably Russia's biggest export since Tetris. in all seriousness, and Tetris didn't even have the mystique of the pieces possibly making out.
Plus, look at them get together. Yeah, yeah.
They didn't come bundled with the original Game Boy.
No. So, as I recall, as I was a young adult when this happened, that the allure of this group was sort of a will they, won't they,
are they or aren't thing. They? Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Like the allure of, and put this in caps, possible lesbians is. I don't want to say it was a novelty, but it was.
Oh, I would say it was exactly playing into this zeitgeist of, you know, LGBT culture being just on the cusp of, do we say acceptability? Do we say like becoming an everyday, becoming normalized? Because let us not forget 2003, correct me if I'm wrong, this is the year of Madonna and Britney Spears kissing at like the MTV Music Awards, right? So it's like,
that sounds everyone is
fascinated with the idea of girls kissing in a really gross 2003 way.
Okay, yes. Yes, that was 2003. There mm-hmm. is an article about the Madonna Britney kiss on, I kid you not, history.com.
it was huge.
It was a big deal. It got people talking. Technically, this would have been a few months after mm-hmm. Eurovision. But yeah, there really did seem to be sort of
a fascination
with this.
A cultural inflection point. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, we'd had... actually, it was 5 years earlier that we'd had the movie Wild Things movie podcast.
No, we can't.
Moving on.
This is not movie podcast anymore. We got.
We're not doing that.
This is about Riga.
This is not a tawdry erotic thriller podcast. Though it certainly could be, actually.
Yeah. So,
I gotta say, I was 12 or 13 in 2003. Hello, have fun. Hi. So I was only like passingly aware of tattoo as a thing. It's always sort of been recognizable to me as long as, you know, music has been around, or as long as I've been aware of music. So you know, tattoo was. You know, it was I, as a middle schooler, was aware of what they were doing.
Derek, what's your recollection of tattoos breakthrough in the U.S., if any?
See, I was trying to remember this all day because I remember hearing about them. I remember the lesbian question being a big thing.
That's it. That's what it was all about.
That's what it was all about. And I couldn't understand I don't remember if it was like controversial or people were just intrigued, or the sense I got from it was they were faking it to get attention, and people kind of resented that. Well, and they had, as far as I know, in the United States, they only had one really big hit, I think.
All the things she said was by far the biggest. I think there were a couple of others. They're Not Gonna Get Us was, I remember seeing the video for that on like MTV and stuff like that, but it was but All the Things She Said was the big one for sure. And that is a fairly sexually charged music video, which certainly contributes. I mean, this is also the era where like Maxim magazine was like the biggest thing.
I've talked about this with friends that like the era from about 2002 to 2005 is the sluttiest that American culture has ever been. Really just showing a lot of skin, showing sort of really steamy, sweaty stuff on cable TV that I really don't think has been achieved since. We show a lot of skin. We have a lot of adult content that has sort of been normalized on TV, on streaming since then. But I feel like it was purely prurient back then. It was really not artful. It had nothing to do with anything except for, you know, making cartoon boys' eyes go boing boing. Like that's all it was for.
Well, and that
I was just gonna say really quickly, this would have been the era when like prestige television on cable, like pay cable channels, came about.
Yeah.
This is like The Sopranos, Sex and the City, very adult oriented kind of television became more mainstream. Whereas prior to this, it was just like standard TV. It's a very, you know, neutered
shows about Raymond and why everyone loves him.
Well, I was gonna say, I don't think that's an impertinent point, because it's sort of like it might be contradictory, but it's like, you know, things like The Sopranos and The Wire and Sex and the City being on, you know, having a prestige status and talking really frankly about adult things, be they sex or violence or crime, it's like, is that actually pushing us towards having a mature conversation that also happens to include potentially societal norm challenging things like this Russian hyperpop duo who may or may not kiss? Like, is that part of the conversation? I don't think that's a canceling contradiction.
I think we reacted to it much the same way that people who read Maxim magazine reacted to seeing Maxim magazine, in that they weren't old enough to buy actual pornography, so they had to settle for that. I mean, they didn't put Maxim magazine behind a cardboard blocker in the newsstand.
So tattoo, in case you have no idea what we're talking about, in which case good on you for sticking with this.
It lasted so long.
Way to go. Good for you. Tattoo was the brainchild of a guy named Ivan Shapovalov. We'll go with what I said. And I mean, this was created in a lab, the way that like American boy bands like Backstreet Boys and NSYNC were. They took a couple of child stars and crafted.
One of them had been in basically like Russian Menudo, right?
I think they both were.
They both were. But, I just remember reading that it was like sort of like a 12 kid rotation thing, very much like Menudo.
Yes, they were basically in Russian Menudo, and they got plucked out of that crafted a style and an image. The image being gay? Question mark. And and gave them some songs and put them in very suggestive videos and, mm-hmm. and things like that. I'll note, when all the things she said came out, they were both 17, which is kind of crazy in hindsight. It worked. They, for the reasons we've talked about, they became one of the biggest acts in the world. And then, I guess, in 2003, they were picked for Eurovision. Russia had looked at, they were doing an internal selection. I think they took a bunch of applicants, like you do for this, hundreds of people sent in songs, and ultimately decided they didn't like any of them and were just going to send Tattoo instead. And
yeah,
that's interesting.
And they obviously wanted to. They did. But they sort of had a reputation at the time for being, for, just to put it broadly, not just in terms of like pushing the envelope with what is permissible in terms of sex, but like really just being, I don't want to use the term bratty because I feel like that's infantilizing, but they very much liked courting controversy and they really liked needling people.
Well, and I think a lot of that is our buddy Ivan that I mentioned.
I think it's his, all part of the persona. Yeah.
Yeah. There was an interview with one of the gals, I don't remember which one. The members are named
Yulia and Lena.
Yep. Yeah, Lena Katina, and Julia Vol. And there was an interview with one of them basically saying, and I think that this was the year or two after Eurovision, but basically saying, like, I think this guy, talking about Ivan, he's more concerned about coming up with stories and controversies and scandals than he is about us as artists. And they ended up separating from him as like their handler, manager, whatever he was. Ian, I think 2004, but at this point, at the Eurovision point, this guy is still in charge of the circus that is Tattoo. And Danny, you wrote a lot of the notes on this, and did
it's
a concerning amount of research about this, and it seems like
a lot of research for a man who's not into ladies.
It's so nuts. It's so easy to fall down this rabbit hole because you have this band that was huge at the time, absolutely huge. Like they could have toured anywhere in Europe and they would have headlined anything that they were doing because people wanted to see them and the music was redacted. So they're a huge band and they go here and it seems like they themselves are the only ones who want to be at Eurovision. It seems like everyone else doesn't want them there. It's so strange. So their record label, Universal Music Russia, thought that, and we've heard this before, they thought that Eurovision was for up-and-comers or for people who didn't need the exposure. And Lord knows they really didn't need the exposure at the time. But their record label was like, you know, a group of this caliber doesn't belong here and it's an insult to their status. And Russia's own publicity team, I've looked at interviews with sort of their handlers, for lack of a better word, and they seem so worried. They seem so terrified the entire time. There's
worried about what?
Not worried about what they would do, but the reaction from everybody else. And I don't know if that's kind of like a, you know, the fact that Russia still sort of viewed as an outsider, as sort of, you know, historically had been for Europe. It's only, you know, 600 years of prejudice. But they sort of were just like, you know, what will they do if we do something daring? Or what will I have to do if I'm held responsible for Tattoo doing something? And I'll be frank, the something that everyone was terrified of was them kissing. For some reason, there was a rumor or a plan that was exposed that at a certain point in their performance, they were going to have a lesbian kiss. Or, as they put it in basically every interview or statement that the EBU put out, a lesbian stunt. A lesbian publicity stunt is the phrase that they would use, which always sounds to me like they're going to be wearing flannel and open mouth kissing while flagpole sitting. But like there's a moment in the staging where they like kneel in front of each other and you can kind of see they're so close that it's like, oh, maybe they would like kiss. Maybe they would kiss right here, even though it makes absolutely no sense to the staging. But nothing makes any sense about Russia being here in 2003. It's so wild. It is difficult to overstate that this was the only story in Eurovision 2003. Like nobody cared about Turkey, who won. Nobody cared about Belgium, who wound up being the surprise number two. Tattoo came in third. They only cared about whether or not the girls will kiss. It was so nuts. There was a moment where they arrived late. So they actually weren't at the first rehearsal, which sort of like added fuel to the rumor mill that they were like, ooh, willfully not doing a jury performance so that they can be like, ooh, we don't know what the staging's going to be. So that's fed into that. And then when they actually did another rehearsal, Lena was the only one who was singing because Yulia was going to her doctor to make sure that her voice was going to be okay for the performance. And this was reported in the press as Yulia is rushed to the hospital the day before the contest. Like the tabloid mill for Tattoo in 2003 was insane. Nobody could stop. And then they sang a song, apparently.
Hooray.
It feels very
like it is so crazy to be like, yeah. I don't think we've ever really covered an act or a song quite like this at Eurovision, in that the song is so inconsequential to the story of what's happening. Like, Loreen coming back to the contest was a story, but like, we still had the song to work with, and the song was a prime example of the Swedish Eurovision winning machine. Like, we had that song to deal with, but patrons, you either have listened to the song or you will soon hear us react to it. But like, oh my gosh, this song is... I'll put it this way.
Well timed, I'll say.
I agree with the cat. Oh my god.
I was saying, it is nuts that the girls also, in the lead up to the contest, were almost boastful that their song was going to win. Like, doing interviews, really poking a sleeping dragon. They did an interview where they called the German entrants blind and old and sad and decrepit. And they're like, listen, in Russia, we make sure to send nurses to care for our sick and infirm. We don't send them to Eurovision. And it's like, wow, that's a really good burn. But also, like, this is Eurovision. Like, you can't and should not say that.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Where to start? Oh, I'll also mention one thing. I watched a Russian language sort of coverage of all of this at the time that obviously came out the week of Eurovision. This reporter put it this way, and I got the vibe from this that it was a sort of a conservative news outlet. Either they are afraid of scandal or they are relying on the fact of one happening. Like, Tattoo was sent because they knew it would be a publicity gold mine for Russia. Okay,
let me just add, you've watched American television, right?
Oh, yes, like, of course I have. Yes, yeah.
That's everything here.
It sure is.
It's why Eurovision isn't popular here, because there aren't enough human interest / crazy drama things this year, notwithstanding, that people can latch on to. And so I guess what would it be like? Maybe it would be like 2003. I'll note there are a couple of notable things about 2003 that have nothing to do with Russia. One is that this was Ukraine's debut. Mm-hmm. Hasta la vista by Alexander, one of my favorite Ukrainian phrases. Hasta la vista.
it's also Serbian.
Yeah, Serbian, obviously. And then I do think when I think back to 2003, I didn't follow it at the time, but when I look back at this contest, I really love Every Way That I Can. I think it's one of the more notable winners in terms of shifting the contest towards a more modern and international feel.
Yeah.
It started a run of these ethnopop bangers winning the contest or coming close.
And I'll add that the number two song, Belgium, is very much that feel as well.
Mm-hmm. Yep, that one is Urban Trod with
it's the one that sort of has like Anomi. A synth flute plus bagpipes.
Yep. And in a completely made up language as well.
Yes.
Which was
and is much more listenable than than Tattoo's song.
Yeah. So yeah, but we're not talking about those. We're talking about this stupid song that finished third, is called Neverneboisia.
So that's Don't Believe It, Don't Fear It, which is I will admit that I have not looked into the lyrics, and I can't overstate this enough. The song did not matter. The lyrical and artistic content of the song did not matter. The big story, I'll say, that we've talked about, or rather, I've talked about, the fact that this was the biggest story. But the biggest component of Tattoo's story was the idea that the EBU announced that they were going to force them to film a performance that they would splice into the broadcast just in case on live TV they decided to do the lesbian kiss. This is how potent and real the rumor was, and this is how afraid the EBU was that it would happen. Like, they really were just going to be like, and if you kiss, we're just rewinding the tape and putting in what you filmed for us. Like, has the EBU ever done something for something that, I mean, I know it was 2003 and the socio-political climate was so different, but like, it was like a moral panic that Tattoo brought to the contest. It wasn't that kinda, they were going to kiss, it was that they were going to, they were... They might as well have, you know, blown themselves up on live TV. Like, that's what it was. That's what it was like.
Well,
I mean, behind all this.
Yeah.
Like, who sat down and thought, OK, we have the biggest act in the world. We need to create a story.
Yeah.
Then that's it. And that's all they had to do. I mean, we keep talking about they came in third. They came in third by 3 points.
Yes. We'll note that it was
real close.
Really close.
I could see if you're a smaller country or newer country to the contest, feeling like Russia sending one of the biggest acts in the world feels a bit like cheating.
Yeah.
But like it's a cheat code basically to
for
send
the tradition to of this contest.
You. Right. Yeah. That like this isn't for them. So like there are the people saying that like this isn't appropriate for Tattoo because they're already big stars. I think for other people the issue maybe was this isn't appropriate for Tattoo because they are because they're big stars, yes. and this is just completely unfair. They're going to get by on recognition, you know, like the Rasmus making it over Sidekicks that one time. Anyway,
yeah.
Danny, you had mentioned cutting to backup performances. There was definitely talk of that this year.
Oh, yeah.
The event of, I mean, I'll be honest, Hurricane is another example of where the story has nothing to do with the song itself.
Mm-hmm.
And I think for just about everyone, you know, they have these extra shows, one, to sell more tickets, two, to give the jury a performance to watch in the case of the final, but also something if there's a protest or something, God forbid, worse than that, they can cut to footage and they can make it seamless, basically.
Yeah.
And it's weird to me that 21 years ago, the thing they had to do that for was Goyle's kissing.
Look, Ellen was already on the air.
I mean, by 2015, that was part of the act. I remember Lithuania had two gay couples kissing on stage.
Mm-hmm.
No question.
Oh, they were backup dancers, though.
They were the backup dancers. I think what's kind of interesting, though, is nowadays that jury show is always the backup tape.
Mm-hmm.
And they talk about that every year, like if someone gets sick or something happens. I mean, Dottie Freyer's
happened with Dottie Freyer. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. Man. Was diagnosed with COVID and they had to play the backup. And that's okay, fine. But to think like, oh, man, this whole thing was just marketing genius. Like they knew exactly what they were doing every step of the way. They knew how to get the attention. I mean, they could have sent the worst song in the world and they still could have come. They could have won the whole damn thing.
Eric, really, I don't know easily. I don't know how to put this gingerly, but they really did.
It's funny you mention that song
at all. But one thing I just kind of want to point out, I think this is really fascinating. Tattoo was like the biggest act in the world, or one of the biggest acts in the world at the time, and they were coming out of name recognition, and it's just so weird to look now. I think this was like a huge game changer for the contest, because after this, you know, Russia really leaned into their musical pedigree to get like sent like Dima Bilan or Sergei Lazarov.
Yeah.
You know, like they said these huge names because they knew they would get the attention. And you kind of see these other countries like digging through and finding these young artists who like nobody's ever heard of, who are like just busking on the street 2 weeks ago and now they're on Eurovision. And it's kind of wild. Well, I mean, hell, even Loreen coming back, it's like, okay, we're gonna tap into our celebrity stockpile and send somebody everyone knows.
It's wild to me that the UK doesn't do that.
Oh, it
is. I mean, like Russia leaning into their strong, very, very popular and lucrative musical scene, and it works well for them. Dima won, Sergei mm-hmm. finished third twice. The UK's relationship with Eurovision is so weird, but it seems odd that they wouldn't maybe lean into that in the same way a little bit more. I guess they did send Ollie Alexander this year, and that was a mixed bag. It seemed like people really liked it, but then also nobody liked it, which was the televote. But I don't know. That's a random observation. So the song itself, it's not good.
It is not good. Strange to encounter a song where the verses are a welcome oasis from the cacophony that is the chorus.
Yeah,
what was the song this year from? Was it Moldova? Moldova this year. Yeah, where you're like, oh god, the chorus, stop, bring me back to the verse, please.
Yeah, the chorus of this is just shrieky, especially when performed live, when it's unbelievably pitchy. And I don't want to say they mailed it in, because I feel like they made an effort. Those two performers,
they are physically invested. They are playing it like they are rock stars. They're
artists. They care about the performance aspect of it. Obviously, everyone, maybe not everyone, but the people around them, they're doing the headlines. They're working on the will they, won't they? Will they, you know, all of that. But they put an effort in. Unfortunately, it was a bad song, and they couldn't do it live. And oh god, that chorus is just loud and high and monotonous. Yeah, that. Yeah, exactly.
You listeners are going to look this up on Spotify or YouTube, and you are going to think that I'm exaggerating, and get in the comments. That is just how the song is.
Mm-hmm. Wait, so really quick, have either of you listened to the studio version of this song? Because I have.
No, I have just listened to the live version.
Because I gotta know if it sounds better.
Have all of us just experienced the live rendition of this song and then just gone, I don't even know to listen to anything else. I'm not even...
No, that was my idea. I listened to it once and I'm just like, we're good here.
Yeah.
Gosh.
Well, yeah, maybe we'll do a reaction to that too.
I mean, I'll say I really like Any Way That I Can from Turkey that year.
Yeah.
I think it's really good. Yeah. Watching the live performance, though, doesn't sound particularly good.
Oh, it's not a good performance.
No.
It's really not.
I do think part of it, too, is just like the sound mixing and all that stuff. It just, for whatever reason.
It doesn't seem like it was a generous arena to the performers.
Yeah.
It does not appear so. No, the vocals in Every Way That I Can are rough on the day. I will say, though, from the second the music starts on that performance, it feels different. There's something special about it. Just immediately tell that, like, oh, this is bigger than what we're used to. This is breaking the mold a little bit. And I'm glad it won. Turkey, please come back.
We miss Turkey.
They just about always brought it. They always sent good music, good, interesting stuff. And I'm really glad they got a win, and that the song is still beloved by the fandom, which is still a highlight of,
you know, when you go back and you watch those compilations of, you know, a little 10 seconds from every song that has won Eurovision, and you're like, man, Every Way That I Can, really, you perk up in an era full of just the most baby food shoveled pop music. Fly on the Wings of Love. Give me a break.
That song's okay. It's from a different time.
It is for sure. But I don't know, if you're winning an international contest, perhaps you should really be breaking the mold.
Perhaps. Yeah.
I mean, this is also the year they gave us Cry Baby by Gemini, so.
Oh god, that's right.
Another zero pointer.
Ooh, yeah. A very low point in the UK's very interesting history, we'll say that. Mm. All right, what else do we need to talk about this performance and about their time in Eurovision? Because we have a few points about after Eurovision, but I want to make sure we cover the contest itself as much as we need to.
I'm not sure. I think we've just, at this point, we have tread well the ground that is Tattoo's scandal machine and how it overshadowed their actual song, which was so mid, so aggressively mid and bad. Not just mid, it was bad. I don't know. Perhaps just to mention that this falls at a very specific moment in the Eurovision story, which is not just that sort of we were getting more mature pop music, or, you know, pop music that at least when you listened to it, there was a semblance of an intellectual challenge to it or an artistic sort of newness to it. But this also comes at a point, I think, in the culture of the Western world, that moment when we were just on the cusp of really accepting like LGBT culture as a normal part of the experience of everyday life. And I should cite that like Iceland's 1997 entrant was out and gay, but didn't have any kissing. In fact, he's surrounded by women the entire time. Vienna International won in 1998, which was very big. And then Ping Pong, who was from Israel, at the 2000 contest, they did a little kiss and it lasted this long. Mwah! And it was just like, you know, right behind the main singers, you know, it was like that just happened. But like, aside from that, it was like, there was no gay kiss at Eurovision. There was no like real, like, you know, real crazy flamboyant flaunting. Like, I don't know. Everyone was scared that, I don't know, Dame Edna was going to take her top off on stage or something when Tattoo came out. Just
what?
So it's the worst thing. I was trying to think happened, of really? What was it? The early 2000s. Who was the gayest European I could think of? I don't know. It happened. This song came out. Tattoo came to Eurovision at a time when the musical landscape was changing at Eurovision, and when the cultural landscape of the West was changing too. So,
and they completely capitalized on it.
And they did. Yeah, that's it. This is so extremely 2003 in so many ways.
Like an opening, and they took it.
I hate to make this comparison, but you do it. Like, I didn't really think about this when we first brought it up. I'm like, oh, we don't talk about the Tattoo song at Eurovision. I'm like, yeah, whatever. The fake lesbians who did a song at Eurovision that was just not very good.
I should say, fake lesbians, that was part of the appeal. But we know now, though, that one of them is bi. One of them is bi.
Which one? We don't know.
Yeah, no way to know.
Just kidding. No, but so I would say this, like, it did absolute, like, we got this. It completely changed the game as far as Eurovision goes. Like, there is a huge shift in what this contest is, in what an entry should be, and how you can win. Like they said, it was prior to this, it was just kind of, oh, this is a song contest for up and comers. And we kind of had pop songs and, you know, not really, you know, there was some boundary pushing here and there, but like for the most part, it was fairly straight down the lens. And then suddenly this comes in and it's just like, it's all the marketing, it's all tabloid stuff. It's all controversy and fame. And now you look at the contest today and there's so much of that, like, surrounding the show. Like, it doesn't matter what your song is. In some cases, if you got all this other stuff, you can really propel yourself. You can get through a semifinal. You can do well on the night. With the performance, with all that. And I find that so fascinating that marketing suddenly became a huge part of this. And the song I would compare it to, and oh God, please forgive me for saying this, but kind of reminds me of how Stefania sort of became it was the right song at the right time.
Yes. Yes.
Like, this is, it just somehow found the exact moment in time when it should have come out.
Mm-hmm.
And it worked. It just worked for them, regardless of how terrible it is.
I don't know. I thought Stefania was pretty good.
I love Eric with the reading comprehension. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I think that's an interesting comparison. And yeah, Danny, when you mentioned let's cover this song, I kind of thought the same thing. But like, no, this is kind of a banner moment in the contest history, and not necessarily in a great way, but it is still
it's extremely representative of what was going on at the time. It's yikes.
Possible lesbians, registered trademark.
And we should say possible lesbians, and this is a good segue into sort of the aftermath of this contest, because the very next year, Tattoo did this little documentary for Russian TV. I forget what it was called, but it basically boils down to, hey, guess what? We're both straight. We're just gal pals. Like, it was just an hour-long bit of of record company propaganda being like, ah, it's all just part of the fun, ain't it?
Yep. Like, yeah, I think some people really felt betrayed by that.
Yeah.
And felt like they were lied to. But the one of the quotes I saw was from one of the gals was just like, it was never meant to be music by lesbians. It was meant to be music for lesbians. It's fine.
Oh, so Sabrina Carpenter.
It's weird. Yeah, exactly. So
I'm gonna get shot for that one.
Yeah. Not really a fan either. I'm also not a lesbian. So okay, Tattoo have broken up a number of different times. They have had there were the Lena and Julia's relationship has been rocky at times, okay at other times. They performed at the Sochi Olympics together, which is probably the biggest thing they've done in the last decade or so. As you noted, Julia came out as bisexual and also made some shockingly homophobic comments on a Russian television show somewhere around that same time. But there are three things I learned about Tattoo post Eurovision that I absolutely must share with you, you guys, and with our listeners. And I'm going to tell you, each one is crazier than the last. And the last is probably the most unhinged thing we have ever talked about on this show. I cannot believe. Yes.
Okay.
This is wild. Okay. Thing one, one of their singles after, sometime after Eurovision was a cover of The Smiths' How Soon Is Now.
Oh yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Not very good.
Tattoo you can imagine did that. The Smiths, you yes. say.
It's not great.
All right.
It's okay. not great. All right. That's thing one. Just really quick. Thing two.
Like Joe Cocker doing an Edith Piaf cover. Like it does not
to
work.
Hear that actually.
What?
Yeah. Was that cover, that How Soon Is Now cover, was that used in a movie?
Oh, maybe.
It just sounds really, because I remember hearing that song and I'm like, God, no, that had to have been in a movie because I don't think I would have heard that on the radio.
Yeah, I don't think you would have. That's a good, I'm going to double check that really quick.
200 kilometers an hour in the wrong lane. I'm American. How am I supposed to know how fast that is?
I don't see anything about it being in a movie.
Okay. Yeah, I'll have to check on that.
I'm just looking at this exchange between an interviewer and Morrissey when he's asked about this. Did you hear Tattoo's version of How Soon Is Now? Yes, it was magnificent. Absolutely. Again, I don't know much about them. They're the teenage Russian lesbians. Well, aren't we all?
Good stuff. Thanks, Morrissey. That's something I've rarely said.
I know. Rare Morrissey W.
Yeah. All right.
The song was never released in the US.
Huh. All right. Here's thing two. And if you think this is wild, just wait. So there's a guy named Alexei Mitrofanov, who is a Russian politician. He's actually the deputy of the State Duma of Russia. So he's a pretty big, high up guy. He's a big weirdo. In 2005, he made an erotic film starring people that resembled Yulia Tymoshenko and Mikhail Saakashvili, who were the presidents of Ukraine and Russia at the time. Basically found two lookalikes, had them have sex with each other, and he released it as a film. Big weirdo. What does this have to do with Tattoo? Great question. In 2006, he released a novel called Tattoo Come Back, which is it presented in the form of text messages and was inspired by Tattoo. Apparently he had a thing for them. I'm going to go ahead and assume that that's what was going on here. I can only imagine what the text messages were like. But it doesn't end there, because that book was somehow adapted into a movie called You and I.
I literally wanted you to say, and it was adapted into a movie called Crash.
Kinds of Kindness. Yeah.
Called,
no. called 1917.
Yeah. It was called You and I, and it starred Misha Barton from the OC.
What?
It starred Anton Yelchin, may he rest in peace.
What?
And Bronson Pinchot was in it. And what? And the ladies from Tattoo were also in it playing themselves, and it's about some friends who bond over the liking Tattoo. It's a movie.
Wow.
Movie.
This can't be real. I have to find this.
Is that the wildest thing?
No.
Oh God, how does it get weirder than this?
Oh,
how does it get weirder than weird porno obsession tattoo fanfic movie adaptation starring Misha Barton
that premiered at Cannes? I'll note.
Okay.
Okay, fair enough.
All right. Well, the emoji movie premiered at Cannes. Mm-hmm. Eric,
did it really?
Yes. Anyway.
All right. Here's the craziest thing. The craziest thing is what our old pal that I mentioned. Sorry,
Shapovalov.
God damn it! Where's my tab for this? Oh, here we go.
Before you get into this, am I going to have to, should I just leave and like open up an incognito tab?
You're maybe going to want to by the time uttering these words,
just because I am on, just because we're recording, are we going to get put on a watch list?
I hope not.
Go on. All right. Proceed.
Okay. What our old pal Ivan Shapovalov, the guy who came up with Tattoo, did after they left him. He came up with a new act, and I'm going to tell you about it.
Oh, no.
She went by the name NATO, N-A-T-O, with the same like lowercase, uppercase thing Tattoo. As so Tattoo. You can see kind of the thing. But here's the thing about NATO. Her aesthetic, I swear to God, I'm not making this up.
What year was this? Like, what's
2005. 2000, and that's important, okay. And we'll get to that.
Oh,
2004, actually. 2004. The aesthetic, the visual theme of NATO is that she was dressed like an Islamic suicide bomber. So she released a song.
Cute. No.
Called
a song.
Yeah, called Chorjavan, that had a basically terrorism themed music video.
Christ.
And the it gets worse.
Go on.
So the music video comes out. She, I think, like blows herself up at the end of it, fitting with the aesthetic theme of this character that Ivan created. And to promote that, she scheduled a debut performance 2004 on September 11th.
I knew it. No. Oh my God.
The theme, it was genuinely intended to, and they said this, the experience of being at this concert was meant to emulate what it's like to be on a plane that's being hijacked. And the tickets were shaped like, or were designed to resemble plane tickets.
Like boarding passes? Oh
yes.
My God.
Yes. And here's the other thing. I will note, this concert did not happen.
Was this character played by like Marina Abramovich? Like, is this just like performance art at this point? It's so shocking. It can't be real.
It didn't happen. They came close. Here's the other thing. The Beslan school siege in which hundreds of children were killed.
Yeah.
Yeah, that happened a week before this concert was scheduled to take place. So between that, it caused it to ultimately be canceled. Russian ministers and stuff were like, this is disgusting. Ivan really needs to be in prison for this. Like, this is like This is insane. This is the craziest thing I've ever heard someone say, literally the biggest yikes that we've ever talked about on the show. Yeah, this is Pink Flamingos levels of tasteless. This is movie podcast. This is horrible. This is ridiculous. Like I know we're talking this up and we're kind of giggling a little bit because of how crazy it is. I want to be very clear. This is unbelievably offensive, and I cannot believe that this was something that was considered at all. But again, it was a promotional campaign meant to get clicks, meant to get eyeballs on something, meant to get people to listen to the song and check out the artist.
Bet it did.
I think in this case, it maybe went a little bit too far didn't want to, because let's be honest, possible lesbianism is a bit more alluring than terrorist attacks. I don't know how he made that leap exactly.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. How could he have made such a mistake? Mm-hmm. Such an easy mistake to make.
Yeah. Oh my God. All right. So that's You can look this up. It's on the internet. I listened to the song. Honestly, I'm not going to endorse this. I will say that like it has sort of the blend of like pop with like Middle Eastern flavor that sometimes the ethnobops in Eurovision have. But you should listen to those and not this psycho. Yeah, this is insane. This is completely nuts. And if you have an even crazier story about Tattoo, I would love to hear it. but this is the bar. All right. So good luck. Folks, check us out. I think we covered it. We can call it there. Yeah, I don't think so. Well, I'm sorry, everyone. And if you want to let us know how you feel about what we just shared, just check us out on social media. Email us at 12pointsforamerica@gmail.com. Check us out, 12 Points for America on Instagram, 12 Points USA on Twitter. And we're on some other things. Those are the ones we're on the most. So I would say check those out. And do check out the Patreon. It really does help and take care of the things that go into making a show that people enjoy. So thank you for enjoying and for helping us continue to do that. We'll be back with something that has nothing to do with any of this, and I'm looking forward to that.
I love having ended this episode on the lowest note possible.
Yeah. Well, opening with it wouldn't have been any better.
There'd have been nowhere to go from there. So yeah. I guess that's it.
Yeah. All right.
Should have teased us at the beginning. I got some real 9/11 stuff coming, but hold on.
God.
We'll get there.
Jesus. All right. Folks, thanks. Thanks as always for listening. We love doing this and love having you be a part of it. Until our next show, I have been Eric.
I've been Derek.
And I've been Danny.
And America.
Stop listening now.
I'm sorry.
For your own sake. This episode will self-destruct in 10 seconds.
No, no.